Lee, over to you. I'd like to hear your reaction, your response.
Thank you, Bill, and I'll try and do justice to as many of points and considerations I heard. And again, it would be amiss not to at least commence by saying thank you again for all of the expressions of support and appreciation. Whilst I'm here today to represent the foundation, the thanks go to all of the people within the foundation and the trustees, because it truly has been a wonderful a team effort. Let me try and just grab some of these fairly quickly. Greg, you were first cab off the rank, and thank you about giving me the sense of connectivity with South Africa. We do actually have some level of engagement happening and looking through how we can have greater penetration through Africa there. So it's a good reminder to again follow up into that space. So thank you. Javier raised two aspects, one which was about the role of investors. And the short answer there is we are very mindful that the investor's voice is heard throughout board presence, trustee presence, staffing capabilities, but also importantly, Javier, about getting the right sentiment of outreach and groupings to bring that investor voice predominantly into the voice of the boards. What I've got to say is I've been incredibly impressed with the work that the VRF and CDSB have done in this space. VRF has a very matured grouping of investors, and our focus is to make sure we continue to grow that in order to get that view of investors back to the board, and we'll be leveraging off that going forward. The European Union discussion isn't necessarily just about the European Union, albeit they're an incredibly important jurisdiction to engage with, but it's with all jurisdictions because everyone's moving. I think, if Ken's still with us there, New Zealand's just taken a very bold and step in advancing. So that's where this engagement needs to happen in a bilateral sense, but with a balance that we've got all voices there through the advisory forum. And I think that's how we build that level of engagement. Giuseppe, yes, there's great recognition about we need different expertise at board and staffing level, but we need to blend it with the expertise that we've got here as well. So it's different and it's blended with what we have. Now, Nigel and Sybil, and my apologies, someone else raised about, is the right way to engage with the emerging markets through what I think the term used was satellite offices, and has any decision been made given that that wasn't in the announcement last week? The shorter answer is no. No decision's been made about that. What we've tried to give a sense of direction is, how we're looking to create the global footprint, but not all of that was announced last week, and so more work needs to be thought through that. But, we need to also recognize there's a natural limit to what offices can function and for what reasons before you get an overlay of too many presence. But, this is an important point because I heard not only is it one of substance, but one of genuine perception that, if you're wanting to have this right level of engagement, you've got to make sure you've got a sentiment of presence. And so let us take that piece away. Whilst I'm with Nigel, the piece around culture, the answer to that is it's the leadership of the boards, plural, leadership of the staff and the foundation, and leadership of the trustees overall, all have a responsibility and accountability on the creation of the blending of the cultures going forward. So, yes, if Erky was here, he would be one, but equally, Andreas, Sue, Nili, I are here, and we will get to appointments of that. And that all need to be people held accountable on that piece. Nigel, you used the term about synergies. You know, what we've set out here is not really one of delivery of synergies. The drivers here have been much more about expertise, you know, utilising what already these organisations have brought to bear to the table, which is fantastic work. You know, there may be some level of synergies in what is developed through the consolidation, but it's more important about the skills and the intellectual property that they bring to the table. Barbara, the multilaterals is the OECD, the World Bank, the United Nations and the IMF, and not in any particular order there, it's just top of my mind. And Ellen, thank you again for your support presence and what we can do further with the multilaterals, particularly around the emerging markets, is greatly appreciated. Like the thinking, Ken, I always value, I genuinely do, that you bring a different perspective at times. And when we use this term about capacity building, yes, I gave it today in terms of thinking about the emerging and developing markets and economies. You've given another great insight and perspective. Don't rule out that there's capacity building that needs to be thought about within in the developed economies, but within those individual organisations. And so I think that comes back to how we work with the preparer community in particular, which is, I think, your encouragement. I did see that Harvard Business Review article as well, Ken, and it got a little bit of focus in discussions in some of the most recent ones I've had, particularly about scope 2 and 3, and do you really need to go into the measurements there, given the nature of what those are? So thank you again for bringing that into the discussions. Now let me come to Aiko's. She had three questions, and one of which I'm hoping I can bring a little, well, some I can bring some clarity and some perhaps a little bit more discussion. Aiko, the reference I made to mid-December was certainly about, and please, you know, this is my goal, not necessarily exactly where we may land, but to have the announcement of the chair and vice chairs. So that's that timing. We did say we would shortly be heading out, and that is the case, which will be before mid-December, with the process for fulfilling the other board members. You know, do we have a timing on that besides get it done as soon as possible? I think our answer on this is, you know, that must be fully and operational by the end of first quarter of 2022, but more steps may need to occur in that beforehand. Now, forgive me, because if there may be some level of difference in language here when we talk about the global baseline. So when we use that term, we're looking at that as being a fairly still a comprehensive approach to whatever the topic that the standard is wishing to address. And it's not, if I inferred from your questions, a suggestion of a really basic minimum. It's not intended to be that. But I think that's where I come back to thinking a little bit more about the proportionality of how we may work with the SME community and whether it's something akin to the IFRS for SMEs. But forgive me, and perhaps offline if I haven't addressed that well enough, but we can talk further about what does that translate into when we use this term global baseline, because it's not meant to be a minimum, but it is meant to be something in which other jurisdictions can build upon for their needs and ambitions. And certainly on other locations, more work, particularly in Asia, needs to occur. So, you know, we wanted to signal that we've taken some direction, but recognising particularly in Asia around locations, more work needs to be done, and very much part of that equation needs to be around the current Asia Oceania office and what that can build into as well. Feng, you know, the support of China throughout all of what we've been doing, from trustee level to engagement in all of our governance, has been unbelievably valuable. And again, I just wanted to thank you. And also, you know, thinking about emerging markets is, again, a really important conversation that we'd like to continue with as well. Yuri, the size of the board and due process, let me try and tackle that in a couple of ways. What we tried to set up in the Constitution were options. Not necessarily all of those options will be exercised, but we wanted to give some level of flexibility through these very early transitional times in order to keep momentum for the new board. When it comes to certainly release of an exposure draft, that is certainly an option that the chairs and vice chairs could consider, but they don't necessarily need to take that route. But at all times, let me reassure you, our due process oversight committee, which is the one charged by the trustees to make sure, are fully engaged in what they're charged to do in this space. So it'll be a real balance here, but with full transparency of giving tools to the new leadership of the board as the board is being built up, and I talked a little bit about timeframes then, but not to do it without all of the sense of oversight, excuse me, that our trustees bring into their priorities. Let me then come to Garth. So, Garth, let me play back a little bit of what I think I heard from you, which is the importance of the focus on adoption and the importance of enforcement. And so, you know, I would say here, Garth, you know, we've got an important role to play with both, but it is going to be different roles. And so, you know, the sense of adoption, we can certainly, and we'll be doing this, look at the what I would call the bottom-up approach, working very much with the investor community, the preparer community, to people to understand and be able to then use the standards as they're produced. But adoption can also come through jurisdictional leadership and government saying, you know, we think these need to be used. And we can work with those jurisdictions, and we will do that. But again, there's a piece there that's not entirely in our hands. So we need to look at both approaches. And that flows to enforcement as well, which is really in the hands of different jurisdictions and their regulators. But that sort of brings us back to, you know, the encouragement and the engagement that IOSCO have been doing. And if some didn't see it, there was a wonderful joint piece by both the chair of the trustees and the chair of IOSCO that have come together with some public commentary. And so, you know, we are wanting to make sure we can work in this next phase with IOSCO, because as we work towards the production of standards, IOSCO have given a direction that they wish to work towards potentially an endorsement mechanism, and that would be incredibly valuable if we were able to work with IOSCO to deal with that, because, you know, that was an important piece of what happened with financial reporting. Now, IOSCO endorsement doesn't automatically lead to adoption, but my goodness, it's a very important part that could influence it. So I might stop there, Bill. I am conscious a little bit around time. I'm not sure if I've covered all. I was scribbling down as I went through them. I do have a note that I should talk a little bit more about the advisory forum, but perhaps I might do that. I think that was from Martin. And I could not, maybe the last thing before passing back to you, Bill, Martin, I need to look back at you. I can see you on my screen there, and You know, it wasn't that long ago that you came to me and said, you know, we've got this thought leadership paper from your organisation, and you know, that played a really important piece in just bringing more attention, more thinking, different views coming to the table. And so, you know, be amiss of me not to pause and reflect on that as well, Martin.
All right, Lee. All right. Well done. That was an impressive response. You may have scribbled you know, the comments from advisory council members, but I think you scribbled better than I do. So thanks for your comprehensive response. Okay, before we let Lee go, any final response, questions, comments for Lee and the team? We are about close to time.